When you read a book, you have to be quiet for a little bit. You have to check out of the world around you, unplug from monitoring your Twitter feed or perhaps the news updates on your phone. Good afternoon, I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. When we turn our attention to a book, our next guest says it is a gift. Joining us now to unwrap these gifts is Will Schwalbe. His new book is titled Books for Living. He's also the author of the End of Your Life Book Club. Will, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You give books the permission to be a guide in your life, to really inform the person you are. When did you give the words on a page this ability to answer questions in your life, big and small?
Well, I think I've always used books in that way. I think back to the earliest memories I have, and I think they're probably the earliest memories so many of us have of books, and that was when my mother used to read books to me before I'd go to sleep. And of course, when a parent reads to a child, it's not just reading the books. The book becomes a springboard for all sorts of conversations about life and about issues and about everything. So I think from my earliest days reading maybe Where the Wild Things Are by Sendak with my mother, I started to see the role that books could play in our lives.
Over your life of reading so many books, how have you processed books? How do you catalog these books in your brain, remember things from books, and then put it all together in this work?
There's a great concept. People used to keep these commonplace books. And what they used to do is have a little notebook. Some people still do, and they'd write down quotes or observations from the books they read. I think our brain is the most amazing commonplace book. So I just let my brain do the sorting for me. I don't consciously try to remember things, but certain things stick with me, certain characters or phrases or plot points or passages. And as I go about my day, they just pop up and I put them to work.
Do you find it easier to learn life lessons from true nonfiction stories or maybe the other way around from fiction?
I learn life lessons from all different kinds of books. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote Books for Living is I really wanted to show the way that every kind of book can be the book you need if you find it at the right time. So I include cookbooks and I include children's books and advice books and a lot of fiction because I think there's so much to learn from fiction. First thing, just being how to see the world through someone else's eyes.
Let's talk about one of these life lessons and your essay on slowing down, because I want to pick this one out because you might not be slowing down right now. Thanks to Google, I learned you're in the throes of a massive book tour, 38 stops in 78 days, I think I read. So I think your life is hectic. What's going on with what you learned from the book, The Importance of Living?
So The Importance of Living is one of the coolest books I've ever encountered. This is a fascinating book. In 1938, this was the biggest bestseller in the world. Everybody around the world was reading Lin Yutang's The Importance of Living. And it is a book about what he calls the noble art of leaving things undone. And the classic Lin Yutang phrase, which I love, is he says, if you've spent a perfectly useless afternoon doing absolutely nothing, you have mastered the art of living. But I turn to this book all the time. Yes, I'm on this having a fantastic time visiting great independent bookstores around the country and meeting readers and going to libraries. But I always make time for a nap. And I'd set the alarm a little earlier than I need to just so I can lie in bed and stare at the ceiling for a while before getting out of bed. And these are all lessons from Lin Yutang. Because one of the fascinating things about this book is you think, so he wrote it in 1938. It's about kind of relaxing and taking things easier, but he wrote it with the shadow of Stalin and Hitler on the horizon. And he wrote it very purposefully to posit that the life of napping and reading of humanism is in fact the antidote to the greed and rush for power that he saw all around him.
So how did you attempt to narrow down your book selection to write these 26 essays? Because you say every book teaches us something. Every book makes a mark. How did you go about whittling all this down?
It was very hard. But one of the things I wanted to make clear is these are not the 26 greatest books ever written, although a couple of them, like Song of Solomon by Toni Morrison, may well be. Nor are these my 26 favorite books, because a lot of my favorite books I just love, but I don't really have anything to tell anybody about them. I just love them. These are all books that I felt have something to teach us at this particular point in time, at this moment where we are in the world, 2016-17, and I feel that though they run the gamut from Homer's Odyssey to Hanya Yanagihara's Little Life, they're books that really speak to people's lives today and in fact, especially speak to this issue of us all rushing around, us checking the little machines in our pockets all the time and not having time for one another.
We're talking with Will Schwalbe. He is a best-selling author of three books. His latest work is Books for Living. And he also wrote The End of Your Life Book Club and Send, Why People Email So Badly and How to Do It Better. Will, there's a chapter that just made me smile, the chapter about napping, the virtues of napping. Tell us about Murakami's What I Talk About When I Talk About Running.
Oh, I'm so glad you like that chapter. It may be one of my favorites. One of the points I want to make is that sometimes the lesson you get from a book may be very different from the lesson the author intended, but that makes it no less valid. So the only time that I run is to catch a bus, and then it's really under duress. So it was an unlikely book for me to pick up What I Talk About When I Talk About Running by the great contemporary novelist Haruki Murakami. And so I was lying in bed on a lazy afternoon, reading this book, and it's all about his running marathons and training for marathons, and I came across the most marvelous little paragraph about how he also likes to take naps. So for me, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running became the book about napping.
You took out of it something that you really wanted to take out of it, and when it stood out to you, it really stood out to you because you could identify.
Absolutely. And it taught me a great behavior that I now do all the time, which is when a friend comes over, your first instinct to say if a friend's visiting is, do you want a drink? Do you want to use the washroom? And now I say to my friends, do you want to have a little nap?
Do you want to rest your eyes for a few minutes while I go do something else?
Exactly. And people are thrilled. About half the time they say, I would love a little nap. And they go crash on the sofa for 15 minutes and you have the most delightful visit after that.
Will, where is your favorite place to read?
My favorite place to read, bar none, is lying fully clothed on my bed. And I'll tell you the reason for that is I love to nap and read and read and nap and nap and read. I love that mood where you're in and out of sleep and reading. Because the amazing thing about that is you can insert yourself into the book. And actually, as I was writing in this book, I wrote about this phenomenon, and I wrote, because of this napping reading, I've been able to spend so many wonderful Mondays and Wednesdays with Maury.
Mm.
And my copy editor, who was quite literal, wrote in the margin, why don't you spend Tuesdays with Maury? And I wrote back, which I thought was sort of obvious, because on Tuesdays he's with Mitch.
So could you name some of your favorite fictional characters and why you find them so endearing?
Well, David Copperfield. As a late teen, I just fell head over heels in love with David Copperfield. And he really became a part of my life. And I think about him all the time. And one of the ways that I wrote about David was that I missed him so much when the book was over that I really didn't know if I could stand it. And over time, I came to realize that he would forever be a part of my life. And David Copperfield actually gave me a model for thinking about and remembering people I've loved and lost through my life. And it made me realize that just like the fictional characters that we love, the story doesn't end when the book ends. The story goes as long as we want. So he's a character I love. Stuart Little.
Oh.
I went crazy for Stuart Little as a kid. And to this day, whenever I'm feeling the need to go in search of something, I try to channel Stuart. And Stuart taught me also the difference between running away, and when you run away, you bring your problems with you, to going in search when you leave your problems behind and go to find something new. And so Stuart is one of my all-time favorites. But also, recently in Hanya Yanagihara's Little Life, the character of Jude. Who's such a damaged character and so broken, but you feel for him so desperately, and you see the way his friends are there for him, and you want to be there for him too. And I think that's one of the great books about friendship ever written.
And going back to Stuart Little, when I read this chapter, I said, wow, wait a minute, did I miss the whole kindness theme in Stuart Little? Because you really attached yourself to how this little mouse created by E.B. White was so very kind and so very optimistic. And when I recall to my childhood reading Stuart Little, I was so much more into his adventures, and I just took his kindness for granted. And it kind of made me stop and say, wow, do I consider kindness in a different way than Will? Or do we just pull things out from books in various different ways from each other?
I think it's so interesting to read the same book at different points throughout your life. And I think the kindness theme hit me much more as an older reader than it did as a younger reader. And a younger reader, I was very involved in his piloting the boat and his heading off in the car. But I was so struck as an older reader by a time he goes in to speak to some school children when he's on his quest to find Margalow. And he talks about if he were king of the world, he would pass a kind of a kindness law. And I thought, that is really a marvelous lesson for our times. And it relates to another book I wrote about that I just absolutely love, which is Wonder by R.J. Palacio. And this is a middle grade reader. It's a book ostensibly for fifth graders about a little boy with a facial deformity going to school for the first time. And it has the most incredible message, which is to choose to be more kind than is necessary.
Yeah, and a great theme for the era that we're living in right now. We live in such cluttered times. Our phones really guide us in so many ways. How do you make time to read every day?
Well, the wonderful thing about making time to read is the more time you make to read, the more time you want to make to read. But I set my alarm early. People say the funniest thing to me sometimes. They'll come up to me and say, I'm trying to be very nice about one of my books. I'm reading your book, and it puts me to sleep every night.
That's a compliment.
It's a compliment. And I know exactly what they're talking about, because when I try to read at night, I'm just too tired. My eyes close in a couple pages. But it is so wonderful to set your alarm early and wake up to read. Because all these friends of mine sort of wake up to do the treadmill or something ghastly like that. And then who wants to wake up? But if you're in the middle of a book that you're loving, you just can't wait for the next day, because it means you get to read again.
We're talking with author Will Schwalbe about how books can give us fresh insights on the big questions of life in ways that perhaps a Google search can't even come close. Will Schwalbe's new book is titled Books for Living, and we'd like to hear what books have made an impression on your life at 800-642-1234. Borrowing from Will's favorite question in life, what are you reading? Give us the answer at 800-642-1234, or send an email about books that have mattered to you at ideas@wpr.org. And when we come back after a short break, we'll welcome into our conversation the owner of Milwaukee's independent Boswell Book Company, Daniel Golden, and maybe hear from you too here on the Ideas Network. We're picking up our conversation with author Will Schwalbe. Will Schwalbe's new book is Books for Living. He's carefully selected 26 books that have somehow, in some way, informed his life, like learning kindness through Stuart Little, with gratitude to E.B. White for creating that cheerful little mouse. And we want to hear about books that have taught you something about life's big questions. Join in this discussion at 800-642-1234. And joining us with Will Schwalbe is Daniel Golden. Daniel is owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me on.
Will has a reading at your bookstore at 7 tonight, so we thought we'd get the festivities started early. What do you think about Will's new book about books?
I am a big fan. I'm one of those people who often reads books out of order. And so I came to Books for a Living first, but there were two things immediately after I finished it. I had to read a book on the list, which wound up being Rebecca, which I had thought about for years and years and years. And I just was what this book does to you, is it just adds all these books to your reading list. And then I went out and read On the End of Your Life Book Club, because I wanted to know more about where this came from. I talked to so many of our customers and fellow booksellers who just love the story of his mom, Marianne Schwalbe. In fact, I even was talking to somebody whose mom was friends with your mom, actually, in the stores. Like, she really was everywhere and knew everybody, it seems like,
didn't she? Yes.
Yeah. So, no, it's really a thrill. And we all think about, I mean, that's we read to escape, we read to learn, but sometimes we find that books kind of teach us something and it sticks with us. And sometimes we don't even know that right away. I assume that you learned some of these things years after that you're like, this is what this book means to me.
Yeah, sometimes some of the books I wrote about, I actually didn't care for when I first read them. The Little Prince is a book that I thought was super annoying when I read it as a young kid. And then I came across it as an adult and it meant a world to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the one of the miracles of books is they find you when you need them. But sometimes if you find them when you don't need them, you need to wait and read them later.
Let's bring a caller in now, Linda from Lake Zurich, Illinois. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What would you like to add?
I found this book I mentioned when I first called. It was a great kids book. It's called The One and Only Ivan, and it's about this silverback gorilla who's kept in captivity. I don't know if the author or your guest has heard of this book. I was going on a road trip with my kids and my family, and when we got in the car, I told my husband and my kids we were going to listen to this book on tape, and they were kind of grumbling. And by the end of the trip, everybody just sat and was captivated by the book and the ending, which was somewhat sad, but it's a wonderful kids book, and I would recommend it.
What was the life lesson that you took away from it and your family took away from it?
Just to know about kindness. Like your guest was talking about, you know, kindness, and especially for kids, and, you know, connection with this character in the book, the girl, who develops this relationship with this gorilla and some other animals. And, you know, I think it was really moving for my kids who, you know, I wasn't even sure were going to like this book.
Yeah, Daniel or Will, children's books that have made an impression on your life.
Yeah, that sounds like such a wonderful book, by the way. That's going right to the top of my to-read pile, and I have heard of that title. I think the distinction between children's books and middle-grade readers and young adult books and adult books are somewhat artificial. The books that have made such a big impression on me, and I keep coming back to Stuart Little, it's actually a book that E.B. White himself got criticism for because it ends in such an inconclusive way. People said that can't possibly be a children's book. A children's book has to have a definitive ending. And I love that he said, well, kids are going to have to learn sometime or other that life isn't always that neat. But I think that the best books are books for all different readers. And I think actually now there's incredible strength in young adult books. There's wonderful things being written.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, Daniel, what
Oh, I was a big fan of Catherine Applegate's next book, Crenshaw, which the caller might enjoy. It's about a boy whose family is struggling with homelessness who befriends an imaginary giant cat who surfs. So, and also definitely a book about connection and belonging.
So. Linda, thank you so much for your call. Let's now go to Thomas in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Thomas.
Hello.
What would you like to add about books?
Oh, just one that really impacted me, and I think it's probably impacted a lot of people, is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. And I don't know, you can read self-help books all you want, from Eckhart Tolle to mythology with Joseph Campbell, and that's the nuts and bolts of it. But I think Paulo and all of his books has a way of making a story out of those lessons, and just really an amazing book.
Will?
It is a marvelous book. I love The Alchemist, and I had a very special discussion once about The Alchemist. As I said, I always ask everybody, what are you reading? And I was on a flight with a West Point cadet, and the flight got really turbulent, and we thought that might be our last flight. And I asked him, what are you reading? And we had the most incredible conversation about The Alchemist. It is a book with great life lessons and a beautiful little fable. I love that book.
Oddly enough, I just read it a month ago, and I'm one of those people that, you know, we sell lots of different kinds of books and we hear lots of different things, but eventually I do generally think oh, this book doesn't need me anymore. I should be reading something else. And so I thought probably I would never, ever, ever, ever read The Alchemist. And we've been helping out a friend buying books for him. And he asked for a copy of The Alchemist. And so I bought the copy and I thought, well, I've got it. So I might as well read it. It's in my hands and I own it. So, yeah, I think books about seeking and are always, you know, I always respond to them. And I think so many people do because we're all looking for some sort of answer. And
yeah. Tom. I noticed also that, which amused me, in a new edition, there's a quote from the actor Will Smith that apparently it's one of his favorite books.
I'm not surprised.
There you go. Thomas, thank you so much for your call. And Will, that story about being on the plane with the cadet, the two of you had an exchange. You got something from the cadet and you gave him a reading list. Is that right?
That's right. Well, people always ask me what to read once I ask them what they're reading. And on this turbulent flight, we had just such a deep conversation that we wound up with A Marvelous Trade. He gave me his genuine, authentic West Point cadet baseball cap. Mm. And I gave him a list of books to read. And I love the cap, so I really hope you like the list.
What for both of you, what is it about book lists that are so prized, so special, and something that we really want from people?
Well, for me, it's funny. People come in my apartment and they look at all the books and they say, have you read all of these books? And I say, of course not. These are the books I want to read. And as long as we have a book list, we can imagine hundreds of hours, days, weeks, months of pleasure, learning, excitement, adventure ahead of us. A book list is possibility. It's opportunity. It's a dream.
And Daniel, as the owner of an independent bookstore, Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, I understand that you were inspired to make your own list after reading Will's book, your own list that you put together?
Oh, sure. I was looking at various books and that mostly recent books and seeing, you know, if I saw life lessons. I was thinking as I was reading the book, did the book come first or did the lesson come first? Did you think, you know, do you think I would like to think about a book about kindness and come up with the book about kindness? Or do you think, what's the lesson in this book? I was thinking about that as I was thinking about books, and some were more obvious than others. There's a book coming out tomorrow called The Hearts of Men by Nicholas Butler. He wrote a book called Shotgun Love Songs, which is very popular in Wisconsin because it's set in Eau Claire. This is also set at a scout camp in the Wisconsin's Northwoods, and it's about several generations of campers and their parents, and one who starts off as a bullied kid who winds up running the camp. And it is definitely a book about honor, and not just the honor that we show each other, but the honor that comes from ourselves. And it's a really wonderful book. I'm really looking forward to selling it. So.
And what qualities resonate with you, Daniel, when you are reading a book, when you say, yes, this is one that will be on my list, this is one I will pass on to someone else?
It's funny. You know, there are you think about books in so many different ways. And I do read books that I really love that I think I might be the only I know this got published and all that, but I might be the only person in the world who will really love this book. And then other times different people come into your heads and you think, oh, I know this teacher is going to love that or this customer is going to love that. And, you know, both experiences are really great. I mean, the one where I think I'm the only person gets a little sad sometimes. But yeah. You still put the book on your rec shelf and you draw. You're like, well, maybe if I draw a really pretty picture, someone will buy it, not knowing that it was only meant for me. But
And what is it, Will, for you that makes you want to pass a particular book along? Is it because you get to know the other person so well and then you pair them with a book? Or can it be in passing to the cadet saying, you know what, this book has a great lesson here and it should be on the list regardless of the person who reads it?
Well, it's all different things. So I love to put people in books together spontaneously. So, for example, if I finish a book and I'm on the road and have a limited amount of luggage and can't take it home, I will quite literally turn to the first person I meet and say, hey, do you like to read? Do you want a book? and pass it along that way. But I love to ask people what they've been reading, what they've been liking, and try to suggest a book based on that. And maybe it's something along the lines of books they like, or maybe it's something totally different. And the reason I love to do that so much is I have a bunch of people who do that for me. I'm very lucky to live near some great independent bookstores. And I always think of it like, if you're a great cook, you have a relationship with your butcher. You go in and say, you know, what's the great meat? What kind of cut? And if you live near a great independent bookstore like Boswell Book Company or like the ones near me, you have a relationship with a bookseller. And so I love that in my own life, and I try to replicate it when I go out in the world.
Well, Marianne in Fish Creek emailed us. She says, I'm 76 years old, but The Country Bunny and the Little Gold Shoes is still a book that brings a smile. My mother referred to it frequently as we were growing up. She says, it teaches great life lessons without being preachy and is beautifully illustrated. It involved the selection of a new Easter bunny and the selection of an unlikely candidate who had 21 little bunny children, but was so wise and kind that she could take on this new task, which she did with courage. So insights from The Country Bunny and the Little Gold Shoes.
Very cool.
Yeah, sounds great. I'll have to look into that one too.
Let's take another call now. Anne in Madison. Hi, Anne.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Wonderful show. So talking about lessons for life, about honor and kindness, compassion. I was given this wonderful audiobook for Christmas I just finished called A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. I think it came out last year. First of all, the writing is so beautiful. I was thinking it was like poetic and philosophical. It's set in Moscow right after the Russian Revolution, what happened to the noblemen then. There, particularly one count who was put under house arrest in a tiny room in the attic of the Hotel Metropole in Moscow.
Mm.
So it just goes from there, how he viewed his new drastically bad circumstances as a glass half full instead of half empty, and how he continued in this life for decades there with maintaining his sense of dignity, his compassion and kindness toward others, and how he influenced people there that he met.
Will, A Gentleman in Moscow.
I've heard absolutely marvelous things about it. It's definitely at the top of my to-read list, but I haven't read it yet. Daniel, have you read that?
It's one of our most loved books in the store from a few of our booksellers. And I was saying, you know, if there's a lesson there, it's funny because I listen to my bookseller, Jane, and she always talks about it being a book about endurance and with honor. And just wonderful book. I Rules of Civility, his last novel, I really loved.
Oh.
And I have read some of it. I actually haven't read the whole book, but I've read, I will. I promised I will, because I actually promised the author that I would. And and he is super amazingly wonderful. And like
well,
I said,
Will's heard some of those promises before.
No, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good at keeping them. So plus I was, you know, the only thing I think that put me off for a little while was I was a Russian major in college, and I had to at the last minute pull out of a trip to Moscow because it was the year we boycotted the Olympics. And I thought, I sat down and I thought, I'm going to be thrown out of this country. And so I had to pull out, and then I had to change my major. And so there's this weird little, like, weird Russian thing going on with me. But I can still say do svidaniya, you know.
Anne, thank you. Anne, thank you so much for your call. Let's now go to Karina in Toma. Hi, Karina.
Hi. Thank you for getting my call. I just wanted to share my experience. I grew up in the communist Romania in a family that was an avid reader, and they instilled that love for books in me, but I was always required to read the serious books that my family counted as the foundation for a good reader, and they were Alexander Dumas, Emily Bronte, Victor Hugo, Thomas Harvey, etc. They were called the classics of of the literature. Mm. And I grew up with those books, but because my young age, I could not really relate to them because they were in past. So in 1991, I moved in Italy where a new variety of books were offered to me, and mainly they were focused on the family. And that is the kind of book I started to connect more because it emphasized the unity and the support in the, among the family members and the love that it gets spread in the family. And I really enjoyed those books. Some of them, they were from South American writers like Isabel Allende, who I love, and Paulo Coelho, who I found that he has a very out-there kind of writing, but I really enjoy his book.
Yeah.
In 2004, I moved in the United States, and I was exposed to a different culture of books. And among the ones that I read here was like the, one of the few that I recall now lately. It was the book Thief. And the number one ladies detective agency by Alexander McCall.
Yeah, right.
Now, both of those books, what taught me is how to be good when you are surrounded with bad things. And when the society it doesn't respond to your expectation as you thought it would, despite everything, how to be good. So. Mm. Those kind of books, they really touch my life. But I also would like to mention The Little Prince by Antoine Saint-Exupéry that was brought up. And it's interesting that as a child, I read it and I saw it in one way. And when I read it as an adult, it brought my tears. And because second time I read it, I was a mom. And I realized that how often we tend to forget the child that we have inside and how we see the world with different eyes. And then I promised myself that I'm going to find that child that's still inside of me, and I'm going to enjoy things that my kids would enjoy through the eyes of the little prince.
Well, Karina, thank you so much for those comments and getting a perspective of what you read in different places in the globe. And so, Will, how we approach literature has probably greatly is influenced by where we live in the world and where our upbringing is and what those books that are surrounding us.
It is. And it's fascinating to see, too, sometimes some of the American authors who are so popular in other parts of the globe, but have been somewhat forgotten here. I mean, I know in my own travels through the former Soviet Union and later through Russia, I was amazed to see how popular Jack London was and his stories. And of course, Jack London was very far to the left here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting that he, you know, and not surprising that he would have been so adopted over there. But he's such a marvelous writer. And it made me a little sad that Russian children were getting this great education in Jack London. And we've stopped reading him entirely.
Yeah. Daniel, do you see those trends at all where you have readers who have vastly different influences in what they're reading because they just were perhaps born in a different country or come from very different places than Milwaukee?
Oh, absolutely. We have visitors from all around the world, and they will ask for all different kinds of books. And what we're happy to see is that we're seeing a lot of books in translation. Of course, half of them were in Swedish over the last year, but I don't know what happened with that. But not necessarily all. There have been lots of wonderful books coming out, and that's sort of a way to bring books from other places here. I was thinking with the caller from Romania who lived in Italy, I think she probably left before these books exploded here, because this is an example of an Italian author that actually became popular in the United States and then went back to Italy, Elena Ferrante, and the quartet that starts with My Brilliant Friend. I think she would really love those books based on what she's said that she's liked before.
Yeah.
We're talking with author Will Schwalbe about his new book, Books for Living, and really all books that have given us something to ponder and answered a deeper question in our lives. We're also joined by Daniel Golden, owner of the independent bookstore Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. I want to hear from you on what books have been instructive in your life at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Will about books? Or Daniel, let's open this up at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back after a short break, maybe hear about your favorite book on the Ideas Network. We're picking up our conversation now with author Will Schwalbe. His latest work is a book about books titled Books for Living. He's cherry-picked for us 26 titles that have given him greater insight into living life, like learning that humans need downtime and a precious nap from time to time, those insights gleaned from the Japanese novelist Haruki Murakami. He was reading Murakami's What I Talk About When I Talk About Running at that time. And Daniel Golden is here with us as well. He's owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. What books have informed your world? Join in the discussion at 800-642-1234 or post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Now, Daniel, on your list, Milwaukee Journal reporter Dan Egan's The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. When I looked at your list, I said, aha, here is a local selection, and he'll be on the Kathleen Dunn Show next week. Why was this book on your list?
Well, I thought the book was terrific, and much like I liked the book Evicted last year, which is also had a local angle but really had national significance, this is a book that has, well, international significance. This is the Great Lakes are 20% of our surface water mass, and as you know from, you know, that can disappear as like the RLC, which once was, I think it was half the size of England and is now dry. Dan is a Pulitzer Prize finalist twice, and what I love about the book is he's a really great storyteller, and he really lays out all the problems that the lakes are having, from invasive species to pollution to the decline of sports fishing to, and why are we so focused on sports fishing, to the possible water grab in the future from other parts of the country and perhaps the world. It's just a terrific book, and I think it's an important book that we have to understand is really an important part of our future. A lot of people say the 20th century wars are fought over oil and 21st century would be fought over water. I'm just quoting.
Let's take another call now. Lynn from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good afternoon. When I was 17, a young woman, and questioning life and the afterlife, I read a book by Peter Beagle called A Fine and Private Place. Well, obviously, I survived. I'm now 62. And I reread it a couple of years ago, and it was profound both times. I got something different out of it each time I read it, and it was still beautiful.
Will?
It's I love hearing stories like that. As I said, there's this author I quote all throughout my book. His name was Lin Yu Tang, and he wrote The Importance of Living. And he has a passage which I thought was so beautiful. He said, as a young person, reading a book is like looking at the moon through a keyhole. And in midlife, reading a book, same book, is like looking at the moon through the crack in a door. But when you get to a certain age and you read that same book, it's like standing on a terrace and looking at the full moon in the open air. And that's why I love to revisit the profound books of my life, too.
Lynn, thank you so much for your call. Let's now go to Ray in Rhinelander. Hi, Ray.
Hi. Daniel and Will, thank you for keeping the sanity of reading going. That's an interesting title for a book.
Yeah.
Anyways, having independent bookstores and people being able to go in places and feel a part of the book is really important. So the two of you are really doing, I think, a fantastic job to keep this going. I just want to mention a couple of books that have touched me. Alan Watts, He was a prolific writer in the 60s. He had a little book called The Wisdom of Insecurity. It was an amazing book because it showed how we all spend this time on building up security, and was actually the flip side of the coin of it, about how insecurity teaches you what real security was about. It was an amazing book. Another book that really touched me was Freddy the Leaf. Remember that children's book and how it dealt with grief for children?
Yes, I do remember that one. Wonderful book.
And I remember Alan Watts, so that so between the two of us.
Yeah.
We got you covered, Ray.
Great suggestions.
Yes, wonderful books.
Yeah, and the wisdom of insecurity there. And I haven't read that book. What about that, Ray? What did you get from it? Yeah, you're there. What did you get from the wisdom of insecurity?
Well, it helped me to look at the uptightness in my life. It helped me to look at my goals and my time and what was important and everything. And, you know, and Will, you started off the show very well in reference to that, you know, about taking naps, taking time to sit and look out the window and watch how the different snowflakes could be flying around, how they look just by relaxing. It's all of the above of that. You know, it's just taking the time to look around you, and books do that too. When you read books, your mind prepares itself for the creative imagination of each individual, and then we can share that with each other. So we have to keep reading books. Otherwise, it'll end up like Fahrenheit. Remember that crazy movie about Fahrenheit something where they were
451.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyways, I can go on and on. But the whole thing is thank you for your sanity on keeping books going, both of you. And have a good day.
Thank you.
On that note, yeah. Will, what would you like to add there in terms of seeing the world more clearly?
Well, I do think it's we do need books, and we need to read and be readers now more than ever. I really fervently believe that. And there's a term I like to use when it comes to reading. And what I call reading is radical listening. Because when you read a book, you can get mad at it, you can scribble things in the margin, you can chuck it across the room. But the one thing you can't do is change the words on the page. And it's one of the few times in our society that we just have to be quiet, listen to someone else, and just not say anything for a little while. There's no commenting function. And boy, that's important. And it's so important that we read all different kinds of books from different perspectives. So I think especially in these fractured, difficult times when people are constantly online and commenting and arguing, taking time to read an actual book, something someone composed to exist for the ages, is just vital.
You also said, Will, that being in a bookstore surrounded by readers is very comforting to you. What is it about books and people who read books that binds us together as a humanity?
Well, I think the reason about the bookstores is bookstores and libraries are two of the only places where we're there for each other. If you go into a Starbucks or a Pete's or any coffee shop, you just see people looking at little screens in their hands. No one's talking to anyone else. Even couples on dates are looking at little screens in their hands. But in bookstores, people are amongst each other and they're bumping up against each other and they're talking.
Daniel, do you find community through books?
I do. I will say that I was in a coffee shop a few days ago where they were talking a lot about coffee. And just to put it, we have a barista, former barista that I used to talk to about books, who has a novel coming out. Her name's Patty Unique Cottrell. She's got a book called Sorry to Disturb the Peace, coming from McSweeney. So it sort of comes around sort of together. I do love talking about books with people. And what I love is when customers start, you know, either sometimes they're introduced and sometimes they just strike up conversations on their own. I beg to differ about the author talking to you without you talking back. I have a lot of friends who write all over their books. I am actually more of a sticky note person, but I absolutely talk back to the authors that I'm reading about.
But the word, you can't change the words.
I can cross them out. I don't, but I could.
Let's take another caller now, Jane in Wausau. Hi, Jane.
Hi there, everybody. I could go on and on about books with you guys forever. I love them. But I wanted to mostly say that for anybody who loves books, there is a movie called 84 Charing Cross Road. It came out quite a long time ago. It stars Anne Bancroft as a New York woman who's been searching for a specific book during World War II, rationing, etc. And she finally gets told about this bookstore in London, so she contacts them by writing. And Anthony Hopkins is the man who owns that bookstore. Their developing friendship over the next few years is just wonderful, and how they talk about getting to see one another and meet one another in person, and they each send gifts at Christmas time back and forth, and it's just a marvelous movie.
It's
for
actually
anybody who likes books.
It's based on an absolutely wonderful book by Helen Hampf, and it's a true story. It's the real story of her correspondence with that London bookseller, and it is one of my absolute favorite books, and it was a chapter that very reluctantly wound up on the cutting room floor. But I absolutely love that book, and I'll write about it at some point in the future. And I've yet to see the movie, but I need to see the movie.
They're both really wonderful, and I have to say to the caller, if you really love that book, you definitely have to read End of Your Life Book Club, because there's something to be said. I mean, there's so much in the book, but one of the things that's most wonderful is that same sort of back and forth about books that you had with your mom.
Oh, thank you.
So
that was one of her favorite books was 84 Charing Cross Road.
I'm not surprised in the least.
It's a real book for readers.
Well, Jane, thank you so much for your call. We have one more call here to fit in. Jackie in Hillsboro. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this conversation. Just a comment on being able to share books with other people. I read a book with my sons called Escape from Baxter's Barn earlier this year, and it was phenomenal. It's this wonderful kind of a mix of Charlotte's Web with the animals and a little bit of Animal Farm, if you're into the animal books from your childhood. But it's great. It is a great book, and everyone I've recommended it to has loved it. I have teachers reading it to their classes in school, and the kids are just enamored with it, and it's just a wonderful story. And I also share books with my grandma. She's 87, and because both of us read too many books to keep track of what the storyline was, we've developed a book report system. So she types me up a little book report on the book, what she thought of it after she read it, and slips it inside so that I will have these as treasures for years to come.
Oh, that is so cool.
One of the neatest ones was her comments on the Nightingale. Because she would have been alive during the World War II era, but there's a lot of things she doesn't remember. And when she read that book and her comments on it, she's like, you know, it's so hard to believe this happened in my lifetime.
Jackie, thank you so much for that. Will?
Oh, it's wonderful to hear that. And I love the sharing across generations. I was doing a book signing and someone came up and said, would you sign this for my grandchildren? And I said, I'd love to. I said, how many grandchildren do you have? And she said, oh, I don't have any yet. but I want to leave it on my shelf. And someday when they're cleaning out my shelf, if I'm lucky enough to have grandchildren, I want them to stumble across some of the books that have that inscription.
Mm. And Daniel, you're hosting Will tonight at your bookstore, Boswell Book Company. Tell us about tonight's event. Give us the details.
Oh, I think you've just gotten a very good taste of it, I would say. there'll probably be a little reading, a little conversation, a little question so people can – I bet at least one person will get up and talk about a book that changed their life. If I know events, well, I wanted to tell that caller, too, that The Nightingale's coming out in paperback. She's doing a very, very short book tour, and it actually happens to be – one of them is here. She's going to the Elm Grove Library – oh, no – Elm Grove Reads at the Elm Grove Women's Club on April 26th. It's a ticketed event because we didn't have capacity, but it's only a $5 ticket. And it's going. That's also going right to the Friends of the Elm Grove Library. So I thought if that person would want to know about it, because it's the kind of book that's really moved a lot of people, and I think they drive many an hour for it. So,
well, thank you both so much. Will, thank you for spending time with us. Will Schwalbe is author of Books for Living. He's also the author of the End of Your Life Book Club. And Daniel Golden is the owner of Boswell Book Company on Milwaukee's East Side. Will has a reading at Daniel's bookstore tonight at 7 o'clock. Let's continue continue this discussion about your great reads over on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow at this time, hate incidents are up across the country, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Jewish community has been the target of massive bomb threats and the vandalism at cemeteries. One high-profile incident in St. Louis destroyed dozens of headstones. We'll hear from the Muslim man who raised thousands of dollars to fix damaged gravestones. Thanks to producer Scotty Myers with on-air production help today from Chris Molina. Technical direction from Dave Potras. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for a Kathleen Dunn, whom we hope has found a brilliant page-turner while on vacation. And you're listening to the Ideas Network.